We are asked as customers over and over and over. I mean, it's just out of control how much we're being asked for survey feedback. And you as the customer sit there and wonder, what are they doing with all of this? And why should I bother to answer this? And it's making the surveys, quite frankly, a lot less effective.
Hey gang, it's Thursday, July 7th. Patty and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Mountain. I'm Marcus, and today I'm joined by our principal analyst who covers customer experience for us, is Patty Soltis. Hey, Patty.
Hey.
Hello there. Thank you so much for joining us. Today's fact, before we get into the topic, the world's most densely populated island is the size of two soccer fields, which is, I don't know, roughly, I guess, two, just pretend it's two football, American football fields, if you're an American person and you're like, what the hell does that mean? It's about that big. So Santa Cruz del Islote in the archipelago of San Bernardo off the coast of Colombia is 2 acres, or about two soccer fields big. It's an island. The man-made island is home to around 500 people who live in around 155 houses that span 4 main streets and 10 neighborhoods. There's no running water or electrical grid. They rely on a power generator and 2 solar stations for electricity. There's also no cars, unsurprisingly, or motorbikes. With so many people packed into such a small space, it's the most densely populated island in the world, according to the British newspaper The Guardian. And thousands of people visit the island every year. That's brilliant. It's incredible to see it. Patty, would you go?
Yeah, that is not going to hit my list of vacation destinations for sure.
How
you
come?
Lost me in a couple different places.
Oh,
I
really?
Don't camp. I believe in 4 stars, and the 4 stars need to have a bathroom with a closing door, a remote control, room service, and a little mini refrigerator.
Did you say a remote control door? Is that what you're asking?
No,
for?
A remote control, oh, okay. Like, you know, television.
That would be cool. Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, fascinating place. But yeah, I'm not sure that I would head out there either. Anyway, today's real topic, why NPS matters and how to deal with angry customers. They did seem like the happiest people in the world, though. I will say probably something about not having electricity and not having to, you know, be on your phone all the time. I think they're living good. So people are increasingly exploding over seemingly everyday annoyances. Too often, how a business responds makes things worse. It doesn't have to be that way, notes Kate Murphy of the Wall Street Journal. So what's the best way to deal with angry customers, she asks. Miss Murphy is a journalist in Houston and the author of You're Not Listening, What You're Missing and Why It Matters. The psychic load of a global pandemic, she goes on to write, social and political upheaval, economic instability, and vague rumblings of a world war have created a situation where even the most placid among us can have a short fuse. You've got to keep in mind that people usually get angry for legitimate reasons, though, says Kevin Forteau, a psychotherapist in San Francisco, the author of Defusing Angry People, Practical Tools for Handling Bullying, Threats, and Violence. So, Patty, before we get into NPS and why that matters, what that is, speaking about customers and them getting seemingly overly frustrated at everyday annoyances, which used to exist a couple of years ago, 10, 20 years ago, maybe 100 years ago. When you think about dishing out I like this idea of a blame pie. In terms of bad customer experiences and growing customer frustration, how much of the blame pie do you give companies for not being empathetic enough versus consumers for being overly demanding?
You know, it's going to all fall to the companies. And there's a reason for that. And that's because we're talking about, you know, in the world I live in, it's about customer experience and what experience are you providing to the customer. Mm-hmm. And so you as the company need to be prepared and you need to make sure your team members are prepared to handle people that are going to be a little off the cuff and not always thinking in a reasonable, rational method. And the best way to do that, I mean, the article talks about a few things. One of them is listening, but another one is really making sure your team members are prepared for these people and how are they going to deal with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, it does seem as though sometimes when you have a bad customer experience, the person trying to help you out, it's the first time they've ever dealt with someone who's upset about something, as opposed to them being like, okay, my training taught me to go through these couple of things. Sometimes they escalate the situation by getting equally as angry or throwing out a sarcastic comment. One way to measure customer satisfaction is through Net Promoter Score, NPS, which some people may have heard of, but you've just recently written about. Net Promoter Score, where it came from, because I've heard about it a bunch and I've seen it used in a few places, but where did it come from? Net Promoter Score, it's a metric that was first developed in 1993 by Fred Reichheld and later adopted in 2003 by 10 years later by Bain & Company, where Mr. Reichheld was a partner, and also Satmetrics. It was adopted by both of them as a way to predict customer purchase and referral behavior. So that's the tiny history of it. But Patty, how does NPS work exactly? Some people may have heard of it, but maybe don't know the mechanics.
Yeah, NPS is the simplest question that is so complex. So the simple question is, how likely are you to recommend my company, product, or service to others? And NPS was started as a loyalty metric and to really certainly get out there and measure advocacy and how did the customer feel about that. So that's really key into inside of it. But once somebody answers that question, ideally it should be on a scale of 0 to 10. And with a 0 being low and 10 being high, and you end up with customers that answer those questions in 3 categories. You have your promoters that score a 9 or a 10, you have your passives that score a 7 or an 8, and then your detractors that score you a 6 to 0. Mm-hmm. And the goal is to see how many people you can get to score you in the promoter category as a 9 or a 10. And that's the important part of it. There's a lot more to it, though, and that's why I'm saying it's one simple question that gets really complex, because there's a Net Promoter system that's been developed since the original question came out almost 20 years ago and started being adopted. So it grows out and it certainly can have some interesting results for companies when it's used the right way.
Mm-hmm. And so just what's your general take on NPS? Are you in the camp of, you know, it's just one of many tools you should be using? Is it, as you know, it's pretty damn important and folks should be using it a lot more? Or are you in the camp of, you know, the third camp of this is the metric when it comes to customer experience?
You know, I'm going to combine two of your camps together there, Marcus.
Okay.
So I'm in the camp that believes that this is an important metric, but I don't think it's the only one that companies should be using to measure their customer experience and see what their customers are thinking and feeling. Mm-hmm. There's a whole voice of the customer program that a company needs to enact. I did a report on that earlier this year and talked about understanding customer insights, because that's what this is all about. How are you getting in and understanding your customer and their insights with it? So I'm going to say it falls in between both of those categories. It's easily adoptable because it's one question.
Yeah.
But it's also should be part of something that's much bigger in the organization to understand the customer.
So you point to some research in your new report that shows 8 out of 10 business leaders worldwide use a NPS, a Net Promoter Score, to measure customer satisfaction. That's according to Gainsight. So if 8 out of 10 business leaders worldwide are using this, why isn't using NPS translating into a better customer experience? Another way to ask this would be, if 8 out of 10 people are using it, or companies, why aren't 8 out of 10 of our experiences brilliant?
Yeah, you know, that is a good question and a little bit of a mind bender out there. And there's two things that are happening with that. The first one is that companies are asking that question. Like you said, 80% of companies are asking that question. But the bigger problem is that most companies don't have a strong voice of the customer program incorporated in. So that feedback that's coming in is coming in and essentially going nowhere inside the organization. And as a result of that, there's 25% of customers, according to Alita, that don't feel heard. So customers are willing to give the feedback, but they don't feel heard because the companies are asking the question, but they don't have a program in place.
It's one thing to be listened to, but it's a different thing to be heard.
Yes. Yeah. Totally different thing to be heard. And the other part is that NPS has now become a bit of a vanity metric. And it's kind of like, you know, who's got the bigger one out there. So companies are competing on this, and that has created all kinds of gamification in the score of NPS. So the people inside the company are trying to build the question and ask it at certain times in a survey, ask it in certain ways, maybe change the scale a little bit. They're doing all kinds of different things to try and get a certain score. I mean, you go to a car dealership and they're just flat out going to tell you, I need you to rate me a 10, because if you don't, I'm going to get in trouble. Mm-hmm. That's not getting customer feedback. That's delineating the whole use of what NPS should be for.
Yeah. You're trying your best to get people to give you that 10. You're not asking why maybe they didn't give you the 10 in the first place.
Exactly. And it's funny because when I was talking to Ken Peterson, who's the president of Question Pro, about this and interviewing him for the report, he had a great phrase. He called it the spray and play metric, because a lot of companies will just put the question out there to everybody, not taking into consideration who should they be getting answers from.
Yeah. Interesting. In your report, you talk about this idea of optimizing NPS. What do you mean by this?
NPS is an amazing system when you break it down into the Net Promoter System and you get past just trying to get that vanity metric score. And really, the great thing about NPS is that it can help you get to the root cause of what's going on with the customer. The customer is now giving you the opportunity to do what we call in my field, close the loop. And that means that the customer is giving you feedback and they're now giving you an opportunity to address it. And that's a really big thing for customers to be able to do that. That's really important. When you adopt the Net Promoter System in the right way, it really helps you build that customer-centric culture. Apple has done an amazing job of this. And if you go into any Apple, anything, and interact with them, they all know what Net Promoter is. They all know what it means. And they are all out there on the same team trying to provide the best service that's there as a result of that. Mm-hmm. And really the ultimate piece behind this is taking your Net Promoter and then tying that into your financial metrics in the organization and saying that if we can move Net Promoter by this much, and we're really looking at this and we're really taking the feedback in you, and that's a really essential step, is to really look at this and take the feedback in, our financials can improve. We can sell more profitably, and our acquisition costs can go down pretty significantly because we can be bringing additional money in by retention and advocacy.
Mm-hmm. I've worked at another company and they had an NPS score. And it's interesting, this idea of letting everybody know in the company know what it is and how it's going to be kind of weaved into the fabric of the organization and what you're trying to achieve. Because I remember the higher ups would kind of mention, hey, we're doing this well with the NPS score. And a lot of people, myself included at the time, you know, what's an NPS score? Like, I've heard of it before, but I don't know how it works. I don't know why it's important to us. I don't know how I should be changing my behavior at work to contribute to this. They would just throw it out there as a trophy of sorts or some kind of metric that they would use to brag about. So yeah, I think that idea of letting everybody know that we're doing this and getting on the same page is very valuable.
Yeah. Another company, Marcus, that's done a really great job with this is Chewy. And they've created the customer-centric culture. They have created the customer insights programs to take the feedback in and to get their CX people partnered with data scientists, tech, all different kinds of different places. And then they've tied it into their metrics. And they know that when they improve retention and that when their customer is a customer for X number of years, that the customer's average spend increases significantly on an incremental basis.
Interesting. That's a great example. In your report, you talk about some different ways to optimize NPS. You talk about making sure that you're not just focusing on people filling out the best score, which is something you just mentioned in terms of a car dealership saying, please give me a 10, my job depends on it. You also talk about benchmarking yourself against others and how people become obsessed with that score and how it looks against other companies. You talk about just asking one question that folds into three different questions. So not just the how likely is it that you would recommend this company, product or service to a friend or colleague, but that folds out into what's the reason for your score. And then on top of that, is there anything we could have done to make your experience more exceptional? So try not to overcomplicate things. It's one question that folds into three. And then finally, detractors receiving the most attention. Those people you said who give you 6 and below out of 10, so much obsession on like, why do they give us 6 out of 10 as opposed to let's look at the people who gave us 9 or 10 out of 10 and figure out how we can replicate that. Which of those do you think is the most important thing for companies to kind of focus on and correct?
I'm going to throw one more thing out there that you didn't mention. It's also in the report, but it's this whole thing out there on survey fatigue. We are asked as customers over and over and over. I mean, it's just out of control how much we're being asked for survey feedback. And you as the customer sit there and wonder, what are they doing with all of this? And why should I bother to answer this? Yeah. So there's a whole problem tied into that survey fatigue piece that's happening. And it's making the surveys, quite frankly, a lot less effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Finally, what tactics work well for dealing with angry customers? It was kind of referred to or kind of in the title of the piece we just mentioned at the top in the Wall Street Journal article. But in your opinion, what tactics work well for dealing with angry customers?
The best thing anybody can do is make sure that they are mentally checked in and prepared for somebody to potentially go off. And that can make all the difference in the world. It helps you to listen better. It helps you to stay calm. It helps you to relate to the customer. And just realizing that this is not personal. This is somebody who has had either another bad experience, a culmination of bad things that have happened to them, or they're just in general pretty angry about what's happened. Just keeping that in mind all the time and staying mentally checked in is so key.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned as well, listen, just a few minutes ago. And that one's fascinating. It's mentioned in the piece and they talk about Arizona State being part of a collaboration that conducts periodic customer rage studies based on a survey developed in the 70s. The survey revealed that what is known as the service recovery paradox is when angry customers had a problem that wasn't resolved, but nevertheless, they felt that someone from the company had listened to them and they were more loyal than customers whose problem was summarily fixed. I thought that was absolutely fascinating. Then secondly, giving people as much information as you can so they feel more in control. Three people saying stuff like people didn't show up today, were extremely short-staffed, developing some kind of sympathy. The doctor had an emergency at the hospital and was delayed getting to the clinic, giving people an idea of why they're being delayed so much. And then finally, offering options, helping people to reschedule or saying, hey, we'll text you back when it's your turn as opposed to making them wait and stand there. I just had this, actually I woke up this morning to a text saying, oh, your Eurostar train to Paris this summer that I booked, we had to cancel that train. And so we need to help you get on another train. And I was kind of like, oh no, it's gonna be such a painful experience. That in the email, they had the three options that I had, whether it was to rebook, whether it's to get a voucher for later, or whether it's to get a refund. And I just went to the site right before this recording and very easy indeed. I picked the option that I wanted and they had the times laid out that were available on a different train. It showed me whether I would be paying more or less, and or pretty much all of the options were for the same price. I wasn't having to pay anything extra. And, you know, I'm not that bothered by it anymore because I'm able to rebook quite easily.
You know, that's interesting, Marcus, and I wish they'd teach that to the airline.
I know. Yeah, airlines, you can learn a thing or two from Eurostar experience. But anyway, so we've got time for the lead. It's time now for the halftime report. Patty, what's your takeaway from the first half?
My takeaway from the first half is to really take a look at how you're using Net Promoter Score inside your organization, and then take a look at how you can use Net Promoter System to really elevate the customer experience and drive to stronger financial results.
Would one of your takeaways also be, you were saying you had a recent airline experience and you had very different customer experiences within the same airline. Would one of your takeaways be try to standardize your customer experience?
Yeah, you know, that's really important. And it's interesting that you bring that up because it was not only the same airline, it was in the same airport. So you would think that there'd be some consistency inside the same airport, but there just isn't. And that's, you know, where it comes out. And it's so important, this training piece and retraining piece and working through these things and just helping the people that are on the front line to know how to work with the customer.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can check out the NPS report we've been referring to that Patty just wrote, Unlocking the Power of NPS. If you're a pro subscriber, go to insiderintelligence.com, search for that, and you can read in more detail all about NPS and how best to use it. That's what we've got time for the lead. It's time now for In Other News, but first, a quick word from our sponsor, Mountain. The rise of streaming television has not only changed how we watch, it's changed how brands advertise on TV. And Mountain's self-serve marketing software has made TV advertising affordable and accessible to any brand. Campaign setup is intuitive, and tracking success is easy with insights into the metrics that matter most. Simply choose your audience, upload your ad creative, and set your budget and goal, and you're ready to launch. Visit mountain.com for more details. All right, folks, we are back today in other news. Neobanks must focus on customer service to stand out from the crowd, and Target will let you grab a coffee and make returns using its curbside service. Story one. Neobanks must focus on customer service to stand out among the crowd and catch up to incumbent banks, per American Banker, writes insider intelligence analyst Jenna McNamee. She cites a JD Power survey showing that less than half, 47% of 3,500 neobank customers felt it was convenient to reach a customer service representative, as opposed to 61% of 6,500 direct bank customers. Jenna notes that neobanks are flush with direct bank customers. So neobanks felt that it was difficult to get hold of a customer service representative. However, direct bank customers felt it was easier, is the point there. Jenna notes that neobanks are flush with customers and new products, but more customers and more offerings add complexity to customer relationships. But Patty, one way these neobanks could improve their customer service is blank.
Well, I think you said it pretty clearly right there. They need to figure out how to make it more convenient to reach a representative. And it's interesting because I was been doing a little bit of reading on this, and that is a key thing, because most of the transactions that are happening digitally, even bigger than that, I think, is you have to make it easier to find the neobanks, because they're not the easiest banks to find out there. And I don't think the awareness in general is that high that they exist. Mm-hmm. And you know, the services that they offer, the way that they've taken some key fees away, you don't know enough about them yet. So I think their biggest thing is really building awareness.
Yeah, there was a piece in the Wall Street Journal titled, Hello, is this Facebook? Anybody there? Nope. And it was talking about, it was from Kirsten Grind, which is basically talking about how difficult it is. They're saying users with account problems go to extreme lengths to reach someone, anyone, for customer service, saying, I've never been able to speak to a human. I mean, that's at Facebook, where they don't seem to have any problem hiring folks. So yeah, you could be the biggest company in the world and still struggle with helping your customers get in contact if there's an issue. Story two. This fall, Target will let customers add a Starbucks order and make returns through its drive-up curbside service. Per a company blog post, notes insider intelligence retail analyst Zach Stambor, Target's curbside drive-up sales exceeded $1 billion in a single quarter, with very strong growth. We estimate that curbside accounts for nearly 6% of the retailer's overall sales. But Patty, Target adding coffee pickup and returns to its curbside service is blank.
Questionable. You know, it makes me wonder if this is equivalent to 6% of their sales. How big of an impact is this really going to have on their overall business? That's one thought that I have. Another thought that I had is, you know, look, Target's not Sonic. Like, you don't expect to drive up and have somebody come out to your car and bring you coffee and food and things like that. You do expect to be able to come up and have somebody bring your purchases or even take your returns inside. That is a pretty nice feature. And even Starbucks doesn't deliver out to your car. You have to sit in that long line through the drive-through and be able to do that. The biggest thing that I wondered about this is how they're training their team members to do this so it's done efficiently, effectively, and quickly. And, you know, what are they training their team members to say when they walk out to the car? Like, what are they saying to the guest at that point in time? You know, how are they making sure that they don't, like, spill it? Or, like, there's so many variables that could happen here. This is something that needs a lot of training on and a lot of clarity on before they're going to execute it and do it well.
Mm-hmm. That's what we've got time for. Thank you so much, Patty, for hanging out.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much to Victoria, who edits the show, and thanks to everyone listening in. We will see you tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers weekly listen, hopefully, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Mountain.